ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। I'm now going to orally reply to an email in which there's several queries. I'll read the email. It is from a devotee who is recently joined one of our ashrams in the United States of America as a brahmachari. There are not many temples in America which accept brahmacharis. So you can these brahmacharis who are present here can feel fortunate that you're in a situation where you can live as brahmacharis and have brahmachari association. So, he writes, due to wonderful association, I take full-heartedly everything that Srila Prabhupada says without any interpretation, and I present it as it is in accordance to time, place, and circumstance. Though I have never had the physical association of Prabhupada, I've been able to receive his mercy and association through lectures, books, and senior devotees. Thank you for your association. Recently, I have been thinking about my future, where I plan to go, what I plan to do. With full consideration that Krishna will inspire and take me where I need to go. I feel, though, that some choices require a bit of pre-planning and training before entering into them. For the past few months, I've been contemplating in my future as a servant of Prabhupada taking sannyas. If one is serious to enter into this ashram, what should he begin to work on? What should he eat? How should his consciousness be? How does one go about learning the traits of a true sannyasi? It reminds of the question of Arjuna to Krishna. When Krishna just began his teachings, then Arjuna asked, Arjuna uvacha, stita prakyasya ka bhasha, samadhisthasya keshava, stita dhi, king prabhasheta, kim asita vrajita kim. Arjuna asked that how does someone in fixed transcendental consciousness talk? How does he walk? How does he sit? What does he say? And in reply, Krishna said, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan atmanyeva atmanatushta sita pragyasta dochate. One who has given up all desires born of the mundane mind and who is situated in the self is known as a person of steady intelligence. No one discusses such things. You go in the street and you start to talk these things, people have no idea what you're talking about. Even there are so many religious people or people who consider themselves to be spiritual, but this idea of controlling the mind and the senses, giving up material desires, people have no idea of such things. So we are very fortunate, as this devotee writes, to have the association in which we can discuss such things and live according to this principle. So, some thoughts about this. This devotee is thinking about his future, which is intelligent. Most people, if they think about their future, they just think about how to acquire better opportunities for sense gratification, how to earn more money, security in old age, which is a joke anyway. Old age means you're just going to die very soon anyway. Thinking about our future in Krishna consciousness, the main planning should be there to aspire to come to this stage of antakale chamameva smaran muktva kale varam yaprayati samadbhavam tyajyat tain asyat nasti sangshaya. Krishna says that one who thinks of me at the time of death comes to me without a doubt. One who quits his body remembering me. So that should be our main planning for the future. We can also think how we have this human form of life. We're very fortunate to have the opportunity to be in Srila Prabhupada's service. So how can we serve him in the best possible way? Apart from thinking about how I can go back to Godhead, then what it, over and above that, we have a duty to serve the Sankirtan mission. So how can I best utilize my life for doing so? And sannyas, accepting sannyas, could be considered, or might naturally be considered, the best role that one can take in the service of Krishna, because sannyas means to fully dedicate oneself, mind, body, and words in the service of Krishna. And although one can do that theoretically in any ashram, practically speaking, in the Grihastha ashram, one is duty bound to attend to other responsibilities. One has to take up the family responsibilities and not artificially renounce them in the name of Krishna consciousness. That doesn't mean that one can't be in principle mind, body, and words dedicated to Krishna, but practically there are some what for most people turn out to be distractions. And a sannyasi is free to preach. He doesn't have these distractions of earning money and social obligations, economic obligations. So even though a grihastha can do a lot of service, a lot of preaching, and be a fully pure devotee, for someone who doesn't have that responsibility and who wants to serve Krishna in the best possible way, it would seem that to aspire for sannyas would be apt. The sannyasi is supposed to be renounced, absorbed in service to Krishna, fully dedicated and competent to guide others. And definitely this movement and the world needs many real sannyasis who can teach by example. Sannyasis are supposed to be the gurus of all varnas and ashrams. So they're supposed to be models of detachment, and in Krishna, sannyasis in Krishna consciousness are supposed to be models of Krishna consciousness who others can look up to, take inspiration from. They're supposed to set the highest standard. So sannyas, within our movement, it's a high profile situation. And we have to be careful also that when coming to Krishna consciousness, if we think, well, I want to do the best, so let me go for the highest situation, we don't get cheated by our mind into adopting the consciousness which we have been raised in the culture we have been raised in, the culture of becoming materially successful, and apply that to Krishna consciousness and think that, well, I have to do the best I can, so okay, let's get to the top with something like corporate ladder climbing. Success in Krishna consciousness cannot be measured by position. Generally, sannyas is offered to devotees who are fit for that role, which means they're supposed to be advanced in Krishna consciousness, but one can aspire for that, for a position within the hierarchy of the Krishna conscious movement due to mixed motives or an improper understanding. So that's always possible. I've several times told an account of I used to visit Rangoon in Burma regularly, and there was one Marwari businessman who I used to regularly visit. So I went there many times as a brahmachari. Then once I went there after taking sannyas, and so he addressed me when I came with my brahmachari name, and I said, actually, now my name is such and such. I've accepted sannyas. And he turned to his friend in the shop and said, promotion ho gaya. That's how he saw it. Materialistic people tend to see it like that. There are many such examples. One devotee, Mrigendra, I believe it was, who I recently met for the last time I was in Los Angeles, I met him. He was at one time managing the BBT. So he's from a Jewish background, so his father is much, maybe it's making a stereotype to say this, but Jews are often associated with business. So his father never liked him joining the Krishna conscious movement. But when his father came to Los Angeles and saw that Mrigendra Prabhu's office as the head of the BBT and doing millions of dollars worth of business, Mrigendra's office was much bigger than his own office, then he was satisfied. My son is, it's good. So we should be careful not to get into that consciousness. It's a real conundrum, because on one hand, Trinadapi Sunichena, we're supposed to be more humble than a blade of grass. And for that, and supposed to be renounced from this world if we're making advancement in Krishna consciousness. And for that purpose, we'll see many Babajis in Govardhan especially, who they do lead deliberately very humble lives in every respect. They deliberately try to cultivate humility by being beggars. Who gives any credence to a beggar? Yeah. they wear old soiled clothes and they try to absorb themselves in bhajan by chanting all the time. But our movement is a preaching movement, and we accept yukta vairagya. We accept the things that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warned against. Lab puja pratishtha jato upashaka gan. Lab means gain, especially monetary gain. Puja and pratishtha means respect, position. So these are obstacles for advancement in devotional service, but in our movement we deliberately accept them because people have such a mentality and they won't respect devotees unless they tend to respect devotees because they show some outward signs of religiosity. Materialistic people, they can't understand who's actually advanced. This Srila Prabhupada, during the period when he was constructing the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, someone asked him, why are you constructing this opulent temple when you're supposed to be a follower of the six Goswamis who are Tyaktva Turnama Shesha Mandalapati Sri Ning Sada Tuchavat Bhutva Dina Ganesh Ganesha Kokarunaya Kopina Kantashrita? The six Goswamis, they gave up all materialistic association as being tucha, insignificant. And their sole possessions were some loincloth and some patchwork quilt for the cold. And in the picture we see regularly of them, the kamandalu is this water pot, which renunciants, they have one water pot which they use for drinking, washing their hands, passing stool. For renunciant, they have one water pot for everything, because they don't have too many possessions. So, why are you building this temple with all this grandeur? And Srila Prabhupada said that, well, if I just stayed under a different tree every night, like the six Goswamis, no one would listen. But if I build a big temple, they'll say, oh, he's a very important Swami. And then they'll listen. So, Srila Prabhupada had that experience. Before he went to America, and after he came back triumphantly with his Western disciples, he was the same Bhaktivedanta Swami, speaking the same message, but prior to his going, no one took him seriously. And after returning, they did take him seriously. He was the same person, same message, but because he had something external to show, people took him more seriously. And then he wanted to build big temples so that people would take this movement seriously, so that the message could be propagated. And in India, people expect ISKCON to build big temples, although building big temples is not our aim and object in and of itself. The real aim and object is to convince people to be Krishna conscious. So accepting sannyas is also a show. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas so that people would respect it, so that they would listen to his message. So in Krishna conscious also, we invite respect, which is, in the words of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who reintroduced sannyas into the, well, we can say practically he introduced it into the sampradaya, because although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself accepted sannyas and several of his followers, there were 9 sannyasis in his retinue, the 9 roots of the Chaitanya tree. But it seems that they all took sannyas officially in the Mayavad Sampradaya. So practically Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur introduced that. But he said, he warned, Tava Pratishtha Shukare Bhishtha, that people are interested in respect, prestige and position. That respect, prestige and position is just like the stool of a pig. So if we're interested in respect, prestige and position, we might as well go and find a pig and let it pass stool and smear it all over our body. We'll be in a better position than one who desires respect. And definitely no one who smears pig stool on him will be respected by anyone. Although possibly in the Western world some punks might think that's something good, but sane people won't respect it. So this career consciousness we have to be very careful of. A sannyas is a yes, the highest position theoretically, although those in an institution, those who have influence in terms of power and money, manpower, power over manpower and money, they may have more actual respect. Although often it's the sannyasis also who have that. But it is a highly prestigious position. Really a devotee should aspire to be the servant of the servant. And especially in the beginning stages of brahmachari life, one should first aspire to be fixed up, as Srila Prabhupada said. He used this term, fixed up, to be sthita pragya, fixed in consciousness. So first one should try to be a good brahmachari. And sannyas is usually within ISKCON offered after, if at all, after many years. Usually at least 10 years. At least. Because it's been seen that it's not an easy ashram to maintain. There are many demands. Sannyasira Alpochitra Sarva Loke Gai, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. The slightest fault of a sannyasi is recognized and broadcast by everyone. So sannyasi can do a lot of good, sannyasi can do a lot of harm. So it's not very easily offered. In the beginning, in brahmachari life, one should try to get fixed, and then we'll see later. Because that vow, especially the vow to be free from contact with women for life, in India still there are some brahmacharis. That consciousness is there of being a brahmachari, but in the West there's no such idea. So it has been seen that it's very difficult to uphold. So in the beginning, try to be a good brahmachari, and that will be a good foundation for whatever our future will be. We could remain in the brahmachari ashram throughout life. We could take sannyas. We could be a good grihastha, because generally good someone who's been a good brahmachari can be a good grihastha. Generally, if someone's a good brahmachari, we don't encourage them to enter grihastha life. But certainly we can expect that those who do, they will be good grihasthas also. And we also very much, apart from sannyasis, to set an example for others, we also need the very much needed as part of our preaching to have good examples of grihasthas, because most of the people in the world are and will be grihasthas, or at least they will associate man and woman. In the modern world, they don't always get married, or even if they get married, they often break up. So we do need good examples of grihasthas also. So those who are well trained as brahmacharis, they can make good grihasthas also. So in the beginning, for the first few years at least, we may not think, although in one sense we may think of our future, but in another sense we should know that what we need to do right now is to work on our present situation. Because there's no question of becoming a sannyasi or even a good steady devotee, unless one is steady in one's practices. So brahmachari life is a good opportunity for that. Brahmacharis, they have the opportunity to have good, steady, regulated sadhana, which is often difficult for grihasthas with their multiple commitments to their family. They have to get their children off to school, and here in India, people most people don't work less than 10 hours a day, which in the West is unusual. Many work longer hours than that. So it's difficult to get good sadhana. Or even in the spare time that one has, apart from the time that's required for commuting, sleeping, eating, bathing, the little time that's left, one can hardly have the energy or the peace or the peacefulness of mind for good sadhana. Because if you're always running here and there and you're completely stressed, it's very difficult just to put yourself into the mode of goodness, sattva guna, and all of a sudden have good sadhana. So brahmachari life is a good opportunity for that, for good sadhana. Brahmachari life is traditionally meant for study, That's the brahmachari, the young boys of the Gurukul. And that is, of course, also very important for those who, even those who join ashrams later, after their teenage years. Often young men join our ashrams in the late teens or early 20s or something like that. So that's also very important, to, so that we can be sthita pragya, fixed in intelligence, fixed in consciousness. So we can understand what we're doing, why we're doing, and have the transcendental message that Srila Prabhupada gave us. We can absorb that through his very powerful and transformative books. There's also hearing. It's part of life in modern ISKCON ashrams that you see devotees walking around with brooms in their hands and these earphones in their ears as they're listening to lectures or kirtans or whatever, cutting sabjis, whatever it may be. So that you can do also. So study is very important. Working hard. It's not that we're just sitting and studying all day. There's a lot of work to do for pushing forward the mission of Krishna consciousness. Maintaining cleanliness. The Srimad Bhagavatam states that one symptom of Kali Yuga is that brahmacharis will be dirty, which means that they're expected to be clean. And actually Srila Prabhupada instituted that in Mayapur. I remember seeing that the Gurukul boys, early in the morning, they'd be out sweeping the paths. They're trained in keeping everything clean. And another very important feature of brahmacharis is working under authority. Not just being completely independent and doing whatever they want, however they want. I think I'll do this, I think I'll do that, but they have to work under some authority also. Developing brahminical qualities and controlling the senses. Brahmachari Gurukule Vasandanto Guru Hitam. Brahmachari lives in the Gurukul, and Danta means he keeps his senses under control. So that endeavor should be there. There's no meaning to a profligate brahmachari. That would be vyabhichari. Brahmachari is one who moves in Brahman, in the spiritual atmosphere. And vyabhichari means he's womanizer and dissolute. So brahmachari life is meant for controlling the senses. And that requires discipline. That's why one should work under authority, and one should also discipline the mind. You have to be very careful, because the senses are very powerful. Balavan indriya gramo, stated in the Bhagavatam, the senses are very powerful. Vidvan sam api karshati. Even one who is very learned can be disturbed. So one has to practice controlling the senses by leading a regulated life, by knowledge. Krishna recommends in Gita that jahi shatru mahabaho kama rupa durasata can kill this enemy known as material desire. So how is that? Sangstabhyat manamatmana, knowing oneself, evangyatva, knowing oneself to be superior to the mind and the senses, one should conquer this enemy by spiritual knowledge. Indriyani primatini haranti prasabang manaha. Krishna warns that the senses, they can just steal our mind. We can just be lost, be gone. Sometimes we see that the devotees, they're seriously practicing, and all of a sudden they're gone, and there's nothing you can say. They're just gone, because the thought of sense gratification has just taken over their mind. They've allowed their mind to become attracted to some form of sense gratification, and they become Pishachi Paile Jaina Mati Chanahoi Maya Grashta Jibir Sheba Shebhavudai. They become like someone who's been captured by a witch. They become captured by Maya, and they become crazy. So it is a razor's edge. Uchishta Jagrata Prapya Avarang Nibodhata. The Upanishads, they warn us that, or they exhort us, arise, awake, attain the boon, become aware of the boon that is available to us. But at the same time, be careful. Kshurasya dhara nishitadarakteya durgang patas tatta kavayovadanti. At the same time, we should be aware that it's just like a razor's edge. It's very sharp, and we can. Those who are learned, they know about these things. They warn us. Be careful. Be very careful. So we shouldn't be complacent and think, I can do what I like. But those kavayovadanti, those who are learned, they warn us, be very careful. Spiritual life, it's like, it's a very tense and tight situation. We do say, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And you might think, well, what's all this pressure and this heavy preaching and this stress and all this discipline, and where's the happiness? It seems like a prison camp. One of my godbrothers, who's an astrologer, he said that by looking at someone's chart, you have to go deeply, otherwise you can't understand. He gave an example. You might see that someone that all their life they have to live in a particular situation where they're not allowed to go outside, and there are so many rules. They don't have any freedom. You think, well, they're going to be in prison. But it could be that they're in an ashram. An ashram and a prison are very similar in many ways. There are rules. You can't go outside. Hey, Gurudas, you want to go to the disco? Maybe one of the brahmacharis would say, hey, we collected so much money. Why don't we go out and buy some wine? You can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. You might think you can do it, but if you're in ashram, regulation means you're not allowed to do that. You're under strict rules. You can't just go here and there. It might seem like a prison, but that is required. So I may say, well, where's the happiness? All this strictness and heaviness, but that is required. That is required. Otherwise, if we think chant Hare Krishna and be happy means do whatever you like, then you won't actually get the happiness of Krishna consciousness, because bhukti mukti spriha yavat pishachi hridi vartate tavat bhakti sukasyatra katama bhyudyo bhavet. As long as the desires for material enjoyment or liberation are in the heart, those desires which are like witches, then where is the question of the happiness of bhakti? So, this strictness, we accept it as being conducive for spiritual life. If we're not happy in that situation, then we don't belong in it. We're not fit for it. Then you can go to the Grihastha Ashram, and that's another kind of prison. That's called Maitunagara, that you're tied up by the chains of sexual desire. Of course, Grihasthas are supposed to be controlled also. But anyway, this whole material world is a prison, and there is some semblance or illusion of freedom, but as I've heard it said, the difference between Brahmachari Ashram and Grihastha Ashram is, in Brahmachari Ashram, you have to do what the Tamil president says, and in the Grihastha Ashram, you have to do what your wife says. So, still you have to do, still you're under control. And you might think, well, I don't like this getting up early every morning. We still have to get up early. Instead of going to Mongolia, you go to work. That's all. So, those who can understand this, they can remain in the Brahmacharya ashram under discipline. And it's a happy life because it's a life of sacrifice. We're working for Guru Hitam, for the pleasure of the Guru. So, that actually brings happiness. Trying to act for our own sense gratification doesn't bring happiness. Yehi sangsparshaja bhoga dukha yoni evate adyantavanta kaunteya nateshu ramate buddha. Every brahmachari should learn this verse. Everyone. It's a great key to how to live in this world. That they're happy. The so-called pleasure that comes from sense gratification is simply a cause of distress, beginning, middle, and end. Therefore, an intelligent person doesn't take part in it. So it's actually a very happy life to give up our own personal desires and work for the pleasure of Krishna. That is the key to happiness. Now, in America, this holy festival of throwing colors has become... it's catching on like a big rage, and they're calling it the Festival of Happiness. And young people, they love it, and they throw colors on each other. But the only problem is that it's de-Krishnaized. And so there won't be any actual happiness. Any happiness in all these festivals comes from serving Krishna. And if you take Krishna out, then the next thing will come the booze and the drugs and illicit sex, but even so, even any festival, any happiness, festival, just, there are so many festivals. The carnival in Brazil is very famous. People go all over the world go from all over the world to visit the carnival, annual carnival. Carnival means like a street festival. I believe that's in Rio. In London, they have the annual carnival in Notting Hill Gate, I think, or something, West London, in which people come together and they play bongo drums and they dance and they do all kinds of wild and crazy things. And people think it's wonderful, but it's a festival of the senses only, so it cannot satisfy the heart. Whereas service to Krishna, even if apparently distressful, that ultimately brings the highest happiness. Tomar sevai du koi jato sheyo to paramashuk. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, all distress is accepted in your service. That is the highest happiness. Real happiness is the happiness of serving Krishna. And we can properly serve Krishna when we stop thinking of serving our senses. So all this has to be properly internalized. When this is internalized, then one can think of accepting sannyas. Maya is always there. We should not underestimate Maya. So it has to be seen that one is very steady and strong. And not just by show. One can make a show of being a strong brahmachari, but that won't last. There has to be some realization, which comes from dedication. Yeah, there's another verse. This yada sangharate chayam komongani vasarvasha indriya and indriya tebhyas tasya pragya pratishtita. Krishna gives the example of withdrawing the senses, like the tortoise. You see, there's some danger, withdraw, don't get involved. Such a person is situated in spiritual intelligence. Tasya pragya pratishtit. Such a person is situated in spiritual intelligence. That word, pragya, in the female form, pragya, is actually a name for Saraswati, who's a goddess. So Durga is one goddess, one Devi, who's trying to involve us in sense gratification, and we can take blessings from Divya Saraswati, Shuddha Saraswati, to have the intelligence to become fixed in spiritual consciousness. For us, Shuddha Saraswati is represented as appeared as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, as he himself alluded to. So when we're talking about sensual attraction, of course there are many forms of sensual attraction, of which sexual attraction is the most prominent. The mighty power of this sexual attraction, astonishing how even a male donkey is attracted to a female donkey, a male pig is attracted to a female pig. It's very difficult to imagine. We don't have much problem imagining how we could be attracted to a beautiful young woman, but we would have a lot of difficulty thinking, how could we be attracted to a female pig? I don't think anyone in the human species ever, when they see a female pig, thinks of going up to it and embracing it, giving it a sexual or any other kind of embrace. But that form is as enchanting to the male pig as the human female form is to the male human. Think about it. The amazing power of Maya. As Srila Prabhupada noted, this Caesar, he was ruling over a whole kingdom, but he was trapped or attracted, controlled by the eyebrows of one Cleopatra. So the mighty power of Maya, even the thought of, even the voice, even the form, that amazing thing, this one of our devotees, he's a sannyasi now, he often told us how, this was many years ago in the 1970s, at Bhaktivedanta Manor in London, there were regularly dramas, you know this story, yeah? There were regularly dramas being performed, the famous duo of Bhumadev and Sakshi Gopal, and they would have others also, they were the main organizers of these dramas. So they would have men only. So when a female role was to be played, there'd be men playing it. And this devotee, who's now a long-time sannyasi in our movement, exemplary sannyasi, exemplary sannyasi in so many ways. So he recalls that when he saw, because the female part was played so well, that even though he knew it was Sakshi Gopal, Brahmachari, that he felt some unusual emotion, because the part was played so well, he dressed in a sari and all these things. Amazing, it's just amazing, the incredible power of Maya. Haranti prasabang manaha. It just takes away. Vidvang san apikarshati. How the mind is taken away. I read an account of some small town in Rajasthan in the early 1950s. So some anthropologists from America, it's the kind of thing they do. They go off to other countries and they study other people. Some people study frogs, and some people study butterflies, and others study humans, and they come to all these conclusions. So he interviewed all these people, and the men, they were saying how they were talking about the attraction of women and how they know it's wrong to be attracted to other people's wives, but it's very difficult to overcome that attraction. And they said that the most disturbing thing was not even seeing them, but hearing the sound of their ankle bells. Because it used to be in India that until recently women would wear ankle bells, and now they still, many of them wear silver, what do you call that? This, what do you call it? Kinkini or something. What's it called? Janja. But that means, doesn't that mean the bells? No. That's Nupur. Anyway, there are different words. I'm just trying to think of an English word. It's like a bracelet. Anklet, that's the word. But now that's also going out of fashion because Indians are modern and they don't do things like having traditional things like anklets for the women. So just the sound of the ankle bells, which, what does that do? It just lets you know there's a woman there, that's all. And just then the mind, the imagination goes wild. Amazing power of mind. So Krishna speaks of the man who is able to control that, control the mind. So brahmachari life is especially meant for that. And Srila Prabhupada writes about sannyas that one should be at least able to control the gross sex desire. So it doesn't mean that by accepting sannyas, one is automatically free from all desires. The desires may be there, but at least one should be confident of controlling them. So it is dangerous. It's a very dangerous ashram in many ways. One can do great service and great damage also. Anyway, that Brahmacharya in Krishna Consciousness, that book is there. So that's good reading for brahmacharis and others also. It's a great responsibility to be a sannyasi, but also to be a brahmachari. Maybe more so in India than in the West, where people don't know what it means to be a sadhu. People expect sadhus to be self-controlled and to have very good character. You just told me that in Kanpur you stopped at a pan stall, not to buy pan, but to ask some directions, and you were wearing Gopi Chandan Tilak, and even though you were dressed in conventional dress, you had this tilak, and the panwala, the person selling pan, he said, "Maharaj, mujhko kuch gyan bata." Maharaj, speak, tell me some knowledge. And by that, clearly he didn't mean tell me something about mechanical engineering or chartered accounting. He meant by gyan, actually the root meaning of, or the general understanding of the word gyan in Indian languages means spiritual knowledge. And then other meanings like material knowledge, that's secondary. But if you say gyan without any other context, it at least it used to mean spiritual knowledge. So that is a great responsibility to represent Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sampradaya, Krishna Consciousness, Srila Prabhupada and his movement. And in India, this saffron dress, it's highly respected. Maybe it's becoming less so because there are so many scandals of sadhus coming out. This Asaram recently came. Although he's married, actually. He's married. He wasn't a sannyasi. But he was known as a sadhu. So married or not married, a sadhu should be a sadhu. And not a womanizer. It's not forbidden within Vedic culture, it's not at all forbidden that one be married. And even some people, they may be, it's not very good, but there may be some men who they go to prostitutes and all this kind. That may be there also. But for a sadhu, the first thing, no messing around with women. That's the first thing. So one should be very careful to represent Krishna consciousness properly and set a good example in that regard. And hopefully the time should come in the West where people realize this also. I mean, still, that dress is there. If people see, people can recognize the dress of a monk or a priest. There are Christian priests and people can, they have robes by which they're recognized and they are expected to be well-behaved and not to be ordinary sense enjoyers. They're supposed to be very cultured, withdrawn, not very materialistic. I still remember from maybe 40 years ago a skit I saw on TV. It was so funny, a comedy of the bishop, like the high priest in the Christian tradition, walking down the street, walking like this, like mafiosi, with two men on his side with dark glasses. And it's just so opposite to what you would expect of a saintly person. It was funny because it's absurd. So people in the West should also come to recognize that Krishna consciousness is the highest spiritual culture. And philosophically they may not understand, but behaviorally, if they see devotees are very well behaved. I remember once in a few years ago in an airport in America, I can't remember exactly what happened. They'd canceled my flight or something. What was it? No, they'd promised me they'd put me on the next flight, and they didn't put me on the next flight. I was saying, come on, I'm supposed to be, I bought the ticket and I'm supposed to put me on the flight. And they said, shanti, shanti, namaste, keep cool. They were thinking that because I was dressed like this, I shouldn't be upset. Although they shouldn't think that they can just, he's a sadhu, put him on the bottom of the waiting list because he hasn't got anything important to do. We have more important things to do. Another important point, I'll just say quickly, although we're over time, but there is the point of being properly situated also. We see some devotees take up brahmachari life, but they may be brahmacharis more because they want to avoid the difficulty of family life than they really want to serve Krishna. And they make some kind of situation within the ashram which is like their little griha. So Srila Prabhupada writes in one place about grihastha brahmacharis, those who are self-controlled in grihastha life. But we shouldn't have brahmachari grihasthas. They do a little service, whatever little they can do, and make sure they always get the best prasadam and everything comfortable and nice. That is not required. Brahmachari should be a good brahmachari, living simply. Or we find that someone is just trying to put it off, and then finally he thinks, well, I should get married, but he's already 55 years old. It happens. It does happen. So brahmachari is good training, and if we can remain in that ashram, that will be... If we can remain properly mentally situated in that ashram, that will be very good for us. But we have to be very careful also and not make a travesty of the whole ashram. And they can also... properly situated in our ashram, understand the duties and the responsibilities. Sannyasis, also, they may aspire to be a sannyasi, but a sannyasi also shouldn't be like a grihastha. If people offer him money, then all right, give it for Krishna's service. Not that a sannyasi should be like the bishop in that comedy skit. Most expensive cars, and always everything most opulent. Of course, Srila Prabhupada accepted opulence in Krishna's service. If you can pull it off, and if people can appreciate that you're actually doing it all fully for Krishna, and by doing that you're able to immensely promote the preaching, all right. But if you're not really doing that significant preaching, or it doesn't really help your preaching, then why have all this opulence? And then the brahmacharis, they'll also want to be like that. They think, oh well, sannyasis, they all have big cars and big opulent apartments, so I should too. So sannyasis, as Srila Prabhupada writes, should be actual models of renunciations. Grihastha sannyasis, we have grihasthas who say, well, we're married, but we're not going to have any children because we don't want to be disturbed. We don't want to preach. Then why get married? I don't know any acharya who ever preached that you get married and then you don't have children because they're a disturbance. You should just do bhakti. Rather, Srila Prabhupada quoted from Manu, putrate kriyate bharya. One should accept a wife for the sake of having a son. Of course, that could be said to be a materialistic consideration, but Srila Prabhupada did quote it also. And again, going back to the 1970s, I remember one of my godbrothers from Germany, he was in England, and he said that he was married and he didn't have children. Srila Prabhupada asked him, why not? He said, well, we just want to do service. And he said, well, then why get married? So Srila Prabhupada expected, as every acharya, and not only within the Gaudiya Sampradaya, within every Sampradaya, and even within the bogus Sampradayas, the Mayavadis who in many ways strictly follow the Vedic principles, they never say that you get married and try to live like a sannyasi. So if you're a brahmachari, be a good brahmachari. If you're a grihastha, then be a good grihastha. Everyone should know what their position and what their role is. Otherwise, where's the varnashram? Another thing is women trying to be men and then trying to make the men into women, and it's just, the whole thing's bizarre. In India, they're following this now. They have women police. And then the women police get raped and by the men police and or whatever, by anyone else. It's just ridiculous. The whole thing's ridiculous. So varnashram, that means Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish varnashram. It doesn't just mean making farms, but it means situating everyone in their proper situation, in which their proper psychophysical situation in which they can serve Krishna. So as far as sannyas is concerned, yeah, everyone should aspire to be a sannyasi, in the sense that Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita in the first verse of the sixth chapter, which is what is it? Anashrita. Karma palam karyam karma karoti yaha sasanya sicha yogi cha nani ragni and chakra. One who does his duty without taking shelter of the results. He does his duty as it's prescribed. He is a real sannyasi and he is a real yogi, not one who simply formally accepts sannyas. In Gita, Krishna says so many things which just Arjuna has a difficult time understanding it because it's so different to all of the stereotyped religious conceptions that Arjuna had. So Krishna taught Arjuna to be a sannyasi by shooting arrows at his gurus. Amazing. It's not for everyone. Hare Krishna. So to this devotee in particular, you've written that wonderful association. So please continue to take guidance in that situation you're in. It's actually, in all of America, it's probably the best situation for brahmacharis in the particular temple that he's in. It's a good, vibrant brahmachari ashram with good guidance. So please remain in that. In my own case, sannyas, it wasn't something that I thought of. I thought, well, maybe when I'm 50, I'll take sannyas. I didn't think I was ready for that or any such thing. But it was proposed to me by my then GBC. So I said, okay. I discussed it a little bit and I said, okay, put me on a 5-year list. I didn't think much about it. Then 5 years came and it was a very disturbed time in our society. But then 3 years after that, I thought, well, anyway, now my brahmachari life is such that as a more senior brahmachari in our society, I'm traveling to different places and giving lectures. That's my main service. And overseeing different situations. So I thought it'd be conducive to my service to accept sannyas. So then I took. It wasn't that I elbowed my way in. I didn't even think to propose myself. So you can propose yourself also, but one has to do so in a mode of selfless service. That's the point, the selfless service mode. That is the real point, that is real sannyas. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? I know we're over time, but we don't have installed deities here, or we have pictures, forms of the Lord, so we can make the arati a little late. Yes, please. One brahmachari, you're giving an example of Srila Prabhupada, and one brahmachari was very sick, and Prabhupada said to go back to his family. Who was that? One of the devotees in Holland. Who was that? Janakinath. Oh, he's Gaur Govindamaraj's disciple. But you said Prabhupada? Oh, I thought I heard Prabhupada. Yeah, that is a problem, especially in the modern age, because with wrong diet and all rubbish foods and wrong way of life, it's a very common syndrome that people have very poor health in the modern age. And we're seeing that in this generation of young men in India also, which wasn't there previously. People used to be strong and healthy, but now they tend to be very sick. Yeah, it does require also at a minimal level of, apart from mental strength, it requires physical strength also to rise early every morning, follow a whole program of sadhana, not sleep much. In some ways, it's also a healthy life, a regulated life, simple diet, health, supposed to be a healthy diet, all right, on all these vegetables you're eating full of chemicals here in India especially. Yeah, but that's a fact. It does require a minimal level of health, because we can't just turn our ashrams into hospitals. Of course, if someone's been serving as a brahmachari for many years, we may not kick him out also if he gets sick. We have to see in individual cases. I know what used to happen in Mayapur. Again, I'm going back to the 1970s, that people used to just dump off their sick sons who couldn't do any work and just dump them off and say, he's joining, we're offering him to you to join your temple. I saw a few cases of that. So, yeah, a minimal level of physical health is required also. That's also a fact. So it may be a good idea that brahmacharis also, apart from their regular activities, they spend some time doing some exercises or whatever. I know in Moscow, where they have in the brahmacharya ashram, they have mandatory yoga session for the brahmacharis, because most of the devotees have some, within some time of joining the movement, they have some serious health problems. That wouldn't be so much because of the Krishna conscious way of life, but because of the way of life that they led before they joined the movement. So that was made mandatory, which is maybe a little controversial, but you can do that and listen to lectures also. It does help to keep the body healthy. And almost everyone in the modern world, at latest, by the time they hit middle age, they start to have all kinds of bodily problems. You told me once that in the last 3 months you spent more time, money and energy than in your whole life, in the rest of their previous life, on medical things. In America, if you get medical problems, watch out, because it's cripplingly expensive. Here in India we see also everyone, they may have money or not money. They go to the hospitals, they need this treatment, that treatment, and they have to take a loan. Poor people, they spend their whole life paying it off. How old is your bag of bones there? 42. So it's middle age has set in. And there may be so many medical problems. Yeah, after a certain time of life, for many people in the modern age, a lot of their energy just goes into keeping their body able to work. And many of them cover it up by taking intoxication. It doesn't really solve any problems, but they just forget it for some time, or they just try to defy the body, but that just makes them more sick. So it is a major issue in the modern age, and that's part of what we should teach our brahmacharis in the gurukuls, is just how to live a healthy life. There wasn't any big thing about it previously, because it was just the way people lived. Food was healthy and not poisonous, the air was healthy and not poisonous, the water was healthy and not poisonous, and people lived basically healthy lives. But nowadays, to know how to keep healthy, it's something you have to learn. But again, I remember traveling in Bangladesh, everyone just knew so many things, just part of the culture. Just Chaitra Mas has come, this time of the year has come, so the heat begins, then you stop eating gur, date gur especially, because it's very heating food. So things like that. And then after sunset, you don't drink coconut water, because it's very cooling, and you shouldn't take very cooling foods at all. Things like that. If you have a cold, you don't take yogurt. So this whole understanding of heating food and cooling food, which is there in Indian culture and Chinese culture. In the West, they have no idea whatsoever. There are many things like that, which is just part of the culture. It's lost now. People are eating pizzas. They have no idea. Once in, I was in Washington State near Seattle in the USA, and staying in the house of Ved Narayan Prabhu. He was living there at the time. In the next house, there were some students living. So 1 o'clock in the morning, I woke up, and they were talking loudly, and I heard one student say, "I'm going out to get some food." It's 1 o'clock in the morning. He's going out to some restaurant, because just at 1 o'clock in the morning, he's feeling hungry. I mean, just, to me, it's just normal in the Western world, but to me, it just seems bizarre. 1 o'clock in the morning, unless you're a Paramahamsa, you should be asleep. And eating in the middle of the night, it's just completely bizarre. It's called modern civilization. People don't even, they have no idea of the basic needs of the body. At night, the body needs to sleep. Daytime is the time for eating, not nighttime. Especially not 1 o'clock in the morning. It's amazing people are not more sick than they are. Okay, Hare Krishna. Let's stop there because it is getting late. Hare Krishna! Amen.